Blog Talk Radio.
This is another edition of Chatting with Rabbi Mike Harvey. We want to say welcome back to our good rabbi because he's been gone for about 2 weeks, maybe 2 weeks since we've been on the air. He was in Israel and he was escorting some students, and today he will tell us all about it. So let's go ahead and say hello to Rabbi Mike. Good afternoon, Rabbi Mike.
Good afternoon, ATN. How are you doing? It's wonderful to be back.
Oh, what a wonderful day. Sunny. It's good to see the sun and not so much rain for a change. Doing very well, thank
you.
And you?
I'm doing great.
Great.
I'm doing great.
Well,
so,
I understand you were in Israel, from the Virgin Islands to Israel. That's a long journey.
That's correct. We traveled from the Virgin Islands to Israel and then to Jordan. With some wonderfully brilliant high schoolers from the local Montessori school. And that's what
yes.
we're going to be talking about during today's show today.
Very well, very well. Well, I'm glad to have you back. Welcome back. And if you notice today, I'm talking to the audience right now, but audience, if you notice today, we played a different theme song. And I've learned so much from the good old rabbi. I have now learned to play the Israel national anthem. I don't know how to pronounce it. Hatika?
Hatika?
Hatika. How do you pronounce it there, Rabbi?
The song I had you play to do an introduction to our show this afternoon was the Israeli national anthem, also known as Hatikva, which is translated to the hope.
The hope. Okay, great, great, great. Well, let's get right into it. You did a lot of traveling. And you have different locations that we have on our website that people can see. We have pictures of it, too. So let's go ahead. Which do you want to start with?
Well, I think the best place to start, ATN, is talking about the reason why we went to Israel.
There you
go. This was the second trip that students from the Virgin Islands took to Israel, a second group. We did it last year, and we did it this year.
Wow.
And both times, the Virgin Islands Montessori School had made a connection with a school in Israel called the Weizmann Institute of Science. And the Weizmann Institute of Science is located in a small town outside of Tel Aviv called Rehovot, just a little south of Tel Aviv. And it is basically the MIT of Israel, multidisciplinary.
Oh, okay.
Basic research institutions, natural and exact sciences, and it was established in 1934 by a man named Daniel Seif and Rebecca Seif of London. And in 1949, it was renamed for Dr. Chaim Weizmann, who was the first president of the State of Israel and who founded the Weizmann Institute of Science. And the Montessori School had made a wonderful connection with the Weizmann Institute, and they have, for the second time, invited the students to come and visit and see what it is that they're working on. And so these high school students, are selected because of their aptitude for science and are chosen by their teachers and their headmaster, and they are given basically an all-expense-paid trip to Israel. And
wow,
I was lucky enough
nice.
I was lucky enough as the representative of Judaism here on St. Thomas to accompany them. It was very generous for them to allow me to go, and it was really, really incredible.
Yeah, I see from the pictures I was doing some research on, there's a lot going on there, a lot more than meets the eye, or at least meets the ear.
That's right. That's
yeah.
right. And one
yes.
of the beautiful things about the Weizmann Institute is that their goal is simply to learn, to uncover mysteries. They don't have an agenda. They're not funded by corporations to find things or to make profit or anything like that. Their job is to work hard, to explore nature, and to see what they find out. And usually when they do find things out, these do lead to new technologies and mm-hmm. helpful research in terms of biochemistry, biology, mathematics, physics, archaeology, all these aspects they are doing these research on. So anything that you see really in terms of brand new technology, a great comes out of the Weizmann Institute of Science, including most of the parts in your cell phone. All of those were researched and developed and created in the Weizmann Institute here in Israel. So it was really an amazing thing to let these kids go. So these kids, we had three high school seniors, one junior and one freshman, and their names were Nikwe, mm-hmm. Anish, Megan, Silas, and Skylar. And you can see that they are from all different walks of life, all different religions,
yeah.
all different backgrounds. That really didn't matter. You know, the fact that it was in Israel had nothing to do with religion. The fact that it was in Israel was that the Weizmann Institute was in Israel. So these students who are across the board in terms of religion and things like that, got to spend some time studying with some of the best scientists right now in the world, in
wow.
technology and biochemistry. One of the things that we were told that they did, and you can see these pictures that I think you may have posted or that were on the presentation that I gave yesterday, that they were viewing atoms. They were splitting them open and viewing them at billions of magnification to see what there was. And it was just, and they asked, why are you doing this? And they said, well, we just want to find out what happened. And so that's how they do it. It must be wonderful for them to be able to just say, just doing it to discover things.
Well, you know, I'll go beyond wonderful. I think it's a wonderful job to have. You play with things until you find something that works. Well, what does this do? Look what I found. A eureka moment until one of those pop up. They continue having
that's
fun.
Exactly what they do.
What a job.
What a job. So while they were doing that, we had an opportunity, my family and I had an opportunity to sort of look around Israel and go to, of course, Jerusalem, which is the
yeah.
main place you want to be in Israel. And our family has some apartments in a small neighborhood, a family neighborhood in Jerusalem called Talpiot. And we were able to stay in this apartment while we were there, and it was a beautiful mm. family area, really, really lovely, cute area, and we were able to, you know, really set up a little home there for us since we were going to be there for like 9 days, and we were
wow.
able to take walks all the way around Jerusalem. We walked all the way all around Jerusalem. So
wow.
We started out in Talpiot, which is south of the main city, the city center, and we walked up. Through, and I saw on the website you had that we walked past the Liberty Bell Park, which is true. We walked past
mm-hmm.
the Liberty Bell Park, which was a beautiful little park, and then we walked towards the city center. And the wonderful thing about the city center is before you get up there, when you're heading up towards the city center of Jerusalem, all of a sudden you start to see across a valley some big stone walls. And my wife,
yeah.
who had never seen this before, said, "What's that?" And I let her know that what she was looking at was the old city walls of Jerusalem built in the Second Temple period.
Wow.
So we're talking about, you know, before the first century BCE, those
yeah.
walls have stood. And there she was looking at them, and they still stand. And it was an amazing thing. We're just walking up the road, and there it is. And
history comes alive.
That's exactly right. And so we continued on into the newer aspect of the city, and we went to some of the more modern aspects. Jerusalem's a very modern city, despite that it's extremely old, but the old city is separated from the new city. And so the new city is really lovely. But one thing that I wanted to tell, and I spoke about this on Tuesday morning, is that there is a law in Jerusalem that every building must be built with a kind of stone called Jerusalem stone. And and Jerusalem stone is an old stone. What makes the city happen is it looks like everything is old. It looks like everything is the same sort of age. So no matter where you go, whether it's a mall or it's a or an ancient building, it all looks the same. It's really really incredible thing. And the other thing that I can mention is that Jerusalem stone, it glows orange at sunset. So the entire city of Jerusalem glows orange at sunset. It's
orange,
really,
orange.
Really
wow.
Really absolutely. It turns orange.
Yeah.
Yep. It is. It really is. So one of the things that we did once the kids were done with the Weizmann Institute, and they'd spent many, many days and many, many hours studying, we took them on a few days around Israel, around Jerusalem, and other aspects of Israel, including the old city of Jerusalem. So we took them through the quarters of Israel. Now, there are four quarters of the old city, which are the Jewish quarter, the Christian quarter, the Armenian quarter, and the Muslim quarter. And these four quarters represented the old neighborhoods, which were divided based on this sort of religion, based on history. But there's a great deal of overlap of historical events throughout these quarters. So one of the examples is that we actually walked through the Muslim quarter to follow the steps that that Jesus apparently took from his journey to the cross. And this walks right through the Muslim quarter, because at that point it was under Roman control, but now it's the Muslim quarter. But we walked from place to place to place, stopping along the way where where it matches the stories in the New Testament. Jesus stopped and put his hand down on the wall, and so you can see a little handprint from where everybody else puts their hand in. You can see the prison he and the other criminals were put into. And then you just walk by these places. And, yesterday morning I was showing this picture of, we walked past this wonderfully stone gated place, and above it's painted the birthplace of the Virgin Mary. Even as a Jew who has no connection to this, it's amazing to just say, huh, that's where it is. That's where it was. How about that? Pretty
man,
amazing.
Oh man, oh man. All the Bible reading comes alive. Yes.
It does. It truly does. And we traveled on back to the old city through the Jewish quarter that evening, that Friday evening, where we were able to spend the Sabbath. We were able to spend Shabbat at what we call the Kotel, the Western Wall of the Great Temple. And thousands of Jews gather every Friday night to pray at this wall, which represents the great temple that stood and was destroyed in 70 CE by the Romans. And we were allowed to go in, we were allowed to touch the wall and pray, and it was quite a spiritual experience. My wife had never been there before, and the Kotel, the Western Wall, is divided in a men's section and a women's section, and this is to respect the ultra-Orthodox who pray this way. So I was able to lead the men, the young boys from our trip from Montessori down to the men's section, while my wife led them down to the women's section. And we all were able to experience what it's like. That's right.
Wow.
So it's hard to describe without any pictures, but if you see pictures of the Kotel, it's really incredible, really incredible. And it was a moving experience, really was. And that was Jerusalem. We spent a great deal of time in Jerusalem. From there, we got on a bus the next morning, and we traveled south to the south of Israel, traveling through the Arava, the desert of Israel. And our first destination was the mountain fortress called Masada. And Masada. I saw you had written on the site. Masada was the last stronghold of the Jewish rebellion against the Romans after 70 CE when they destroyed the uprising. And the fortress of Masada actually used to be owned by Herod, the Roman king. And it was abandoned. And so the Jews were able to go up there. The Jewish rebels were able to stay up there, and they had plenty of food, plenty of water, plenty of places to go. It's this huge fortress. And the Romans found out that they were there, and they traveled down to Masada to destroy them and put them into slavery. And so you can see when you go to Masada, at the top of Masada, it's very easy to see when the enemy troops are coming. So the Jewish rebels were able to hold them off for a long time. And it took actually the Romans building a ramp, up the side of a mountain to try and get close to these rebels. That's how hard it was for the Romans to try to destroy Masada. And you can see little bits of this ramp when you are at Masada. A lot of it has been washed away because of 2,000 years of rainfall and that happens. Yes. But you can see the remnants of the hard work of the Romans. This is how hard they were working just to trying to kill or enslave a few hundred Jews.
When
the Roman army got to the top of Masada, when they finally got there, what they found was that the Jews had decided they were not going to go into slavery. They were not going to be murdered. Instead, they decided to commit mass suicide and die together. And so it was the last act of rebellion against this tyrannical, oppressive force that wanted to take away Jewish identity. So it was a very holy place and an incredible, incredible place. And it looks out onto the Dead Sea, which was our next stop. The Dead Sea, which is made of 30% salt, and a normal ocean is something like 2 to 3%. So when you go into an ocean and you taste that salt, when you go and you go to a place that's 30% salt, you are able to sit down and float. No problem. People go down
sit
and,
on the water.
And they float. You sit right on the water.
Yeah.
So you're able to just sit right on the water.
Wow.
So you never know about legends about people walking on water. You could walk on the Dead Sea water, but you never know. You never know.
I was about to say
It'd be hard, but you could do it. You could do it.
Yeah.
So not only is it fun because you can float, but because of the salt and the sulfur pools and the minerals that are in the Dead Sea, people come from thousands of miles just to take a dip in it because it does wonders for psoriasis or other skin disorders. It does wonders for all kinds of health issues because of all these minerals that they have. And when you step out of the Dead Sea, you see right away how your skin feels. It feels soft. It feels nourished. Because all of these minerals are in there, and all the salt washes away the dead skin and that sorts of things. So next to the Dead Sea, there are these resorts, these resorts where people have built these spas where people can come in and take dips in sulfur pools. I don't know if you've ever smelled sulfur, HCN, but it's basically rotten eggs.
Yes.
That's a pretty terrible smell.
Oh, I did it.
Pretty terrible
smell. First time I was in chemistry class. Yes.
So there
not
you
a
go.
Good smell.
So you walk into these spas, and that's what you smell. The whole place smells like rotten eggs. But a lot of people are there sitting in these sulfur pools, hot pools, cold pools. They're getting mud baths from the mud in the Dead Sea is cherished around the world. People put it on their face, on their bodies.
Wow.
Nourishes their skin. It's a whole industry. And one thing that I didn't mention yesterday in our presentation that I'll mention now is that because water is such a premium in Israel, because it's in the middle of the desert, they have cut off the supply of water that goes into the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea was water would flow from the north of Israel, from the Galilean Sea, and it would help maintain the Dead Sea. But because they decided, the Israeli government said, well, you know, we're going to take the water and we don't care if it goes into the Dead Sea is beginning to shrink. And it's beginning to shrink, I think it's something like a few meters each year. And so 20 years ago when I went to Israel, the resorts that were built, the spas that were built, went right to the edge of the sea. Now you have to take a shuttle from the spa to the sea because so much has dried up. And it's really becoming a natural disaster that pretty soon the Dead Sea just won't be there anymore. And it's very sad, but in terms of the things that Israeli government has to worry about, it's sort of low on the list.
Wow, sorry to hear that. I guess that's just life, huh?
Yes, indeed. So it's also a problem because there's all these sinkholes that form around these dried up areas, and so it's very dangerous for cars to drive around because people can sink and it becomes quicksand and that sort of thing. But other than that, you can stare across the Dead Sea into Jordan, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place. So speaking of Jordan, while we've got a little bit of time left, we spent our last day with the students going to the country of Jordan. We traveled to the south of Israel to an area where we would cross over into Jordan, and we drove another 2 hours or so from the border of Jordan, Israel, to the ancient city of Petra. And which was the capital city of the Arab Nabataeans, the city was established most likely as early as 312 BCE. So we're talking about quite a bit of time ago. And it still stands, and it's still an amazing place. Our tour guide was actually born in Petra and lived in Petra because the people of Petra, the nomadic tribes, the Jordanian nomadic tribes who lived in Petra, were actually only asked to leave Petra in the 1980s. So his family dates back thousands of years. We're living in Petra.
Wow. Amazing.
Nabataean architecture is very similar to Roman architecture. And so you can see the roads that were built. And there are temples and there are houses and caves and altars all carved into the rock of Petra. And the reason why it was all there is because it was very strategic. It was sort of secret. You can't see Petra from above. You can't see it from unless you're at the entrance to Petra. So it was a very secluded place. And the most famous building in Petra is called Al-Khazneh, and it's the treasury. And it was built as a mausoleum in the first century CE. And if you've ever seen Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, that's the building that they ride into. That's right, built right out of the wall. But there are palaces, there are homes and temples, all built into the rock, and it was truly incredible. And that was our last day from that. We took a bus to the Amman airport, and we flew home.
Well, welcome back. You're home now. But let me ask you this. Did the students felt like they stepped out of the present and into the past?
I think so. I think it was very moving for a great deal
of
them. I think they had never experienced anything like it, really.
Yes, that's a rich experience for them, yes. I mean, what I know of Israel is what I learned in National Geographic when I was their age. Now, I've never been there yet, but nevertheless, I know it exists, but I've never seen it. And here are these young students now, high school students, are now having had the experience of being there, exposed to it, seeing it, seeing history come alive. Fantastic. Guess what?
And we hope that these kids will
Let me interrupt you a minute. Wait a minute. One second, please. Let me interrupt you a minute. Just want to say this. next time you're going back next year or whenever you're going again, I'm going to join a high school so I can get to go along as a student.
Okay. You can certainly do that. You can certainly do that.
Okay.
But the idea is, Jan, that these kids, when they come back, that they see multicultural ideas.
Yes.
They see multicultural
yes.
Situations. In a place like Israel
yes.
and Jordan, you can't get any more multicultural than that. So we want
right.
to basically help train our high schoolers here in St. Thomas to get a little bit more understanding of the world. And that's what
diversity.
This trip was all about.
Fantastic.
Right.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yes. Just in doing a little research myself, I learned so much. And it's a lot going on there. Wow. Interesting. Well, guess what? We have about 4 minutes left, and there's still some last-minute details I want to check with you on. Anything else about
Please.
Israel you want to mention before we move on?
Just that, you know, Israel is a kind of place that is portrayed very differently in the news than it is in real life. And so I encourage
yes.
our listeners
yes.
to go check
yes.
it out themselves and see what a beautiful
exactly.
Place it really is.
And for those who haven't been there, there's a link to the official Israel website on our page. So you can go there, and I'll mention it. It is http://info.goisrael.com. Then I guess you have to go for the English version, so it would be /en. But nevertheless, go ahead and try that out. Check it out. Oh, it's wonderful. Wonderful. So what events
Great.
Coming up this week or in the calendar anytime? This is November month, almost December.
So almost December, we have a wonderful event that's coming up at the Hebrew Congregation of St. Thomas on Friday, December 2nd. We have a visit from a very prominent Jewish author. Her name is Maggie Anton, and she is the author of many, many books that help explain Jewish history and rabbinic texts, and she's just a wonderful author, and she will be speaking at Shabbat services at our historic sanctuary on Friday, December 2nd at 6:30 p.m. And then she will be speaking and teaching the next morning on Saturday, December 3rd for a Torah study event. And so she is a brilliant woman who can teach a great deal. So this is really the event you want to go to, Saturday, December 3rd at 10 a.m. in our Lilienfeld house. All are welcome. A little bit of breakfast will be served. We hope that people will come and join us and be there for that. That's really what we're looking forward to. Besides that, we've got a little bit of time, but Hanukkah's coming up. Just like, you know, and you would like this, ATN, Hanukkah begins on Christmas Eve this year. So our holidays coincide this year. So that's going to be happening then.
Fantastic. Amazing. Well, I am so glad that you're back, because now this helps to bring me and then brings the audience also up to stuff on what's going on in the Hebrew world, the Jewish world. Wow. Amazing.
Absolutely.
But
Absolutely.
Welcome back again. Welcome back. And we have missed you, but nevertheless, you brought back a wealth of information, rich information out of the history books. Couldn't ask you better than that. So,
well, it's good to be back.
Let's have a good. Glad to hear that. Can we have remain, and how about a closing thought and then a prayer?
Certainly. Well, like I said before, we're just very grateful that our children here, our students here in St. Thomas, can get exposed to such amazing things, such as going to Israel. So we're very grateful to all those who helped fund this trip. It cost upwards of $25,000, and there were some very, very generous people who gave their money or their corporate money to get us there. It took the entire group of all of us helping to raise this money to do it, and we're very, very grateful for our sponsors, and we hope that next year those who have sponsored us before will sponsor us again, but also that next year there are new people who are listening and enjoy to hear what we were able to expose these students to, maybe you'd be interested in sponsoring the next trip. We would absolutely love that.
Great. Well, I guess we'll have to forego to prayer. We're down to about 10 seconds, yeah. Oh,
well, I'll tell you
Rabbi,
what, we'll
and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be here with us. And I'm going to go right into our at National Anthem of Israel. Shalom. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Etienne. Thank you.
You're welcome.